A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The truth is the most convincing story that maps onto reality, and that's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
We must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Thursday, March 21st, 2024, the 1156th day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. By doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free a couple days later on a wide variety of podcast platforms and, of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/imyourmoderator. Now, before we get started, I began this year talking about what I thought the most important issues are and saying that I wanted to spend more time focusing on those and less time focusing on the news of the day type stories, whatever the new woke drama is. At this point, most of the people on our side, and I'm assuming that everyone who listens to my show, has the ability to analyze all of these day-to-day mainstream media events on their own. I said I wanted to focus on the bigger macro topics, like election fraud. Are we going to have an election this year? And what will it mean if it's rigged? Like the fact that our financial system is changing, the dollar is collapsing, while the multipolar world is emerging, and with it a new currency collective called BRICS. Will we be able to avoid conflict in this year of turmoil worldwide? Will we be able to avoid the psyops that are just coming at us like fastballs at our head every day? And I hope we will be able to do all those things. But one of those things is that currency collapse, which seems more and more inevitable, although we can hope not. We don't want people to go through economic suffering. It just is a possibility. And if we understand that it is a possibility, then we need to be thinking about ways to mitigate the problem as it might affect us and our families. And I am of the belief that one of the ways to do that is by diversifying assets into precious metals or into Bitcoin. And I know that Bitcoin is scary to a lot of people, or it seems impossible to understand, or you think it's some kind of scam. I understand all that. I remember 10 years ago making fun of a friend of mine in LA who was getting into Bitcoin mining, and I made every dumb joke that people who are dumb about Bitcoin make. Well, now that dude probably has a bunch of Bitcoin, and I have a little tiny bit of Bitcoin. Now, I'm not the guy to teach you about Bitcoin. You need to learn for yourself, which means you need to read some books, you need to watch some videos, you need to listen to some podcasts, some lectures, try to get a bunch of viewpoints. You want a deep and firm understanding of these things. But in the meantime, while you gain that understanding, you should still be considering maybe this is something worth diversifying into a little bit, because there are some pretty well dialed in and pretty brilliant people who seem to believe that this is a critical part of our future. Now, you can say you don't like those people or you don't trust those people when those people are like Elon Musk or Jack Dorsey, and I get it. There are downsides on these people. It's also true that there are downsides on me and there are downsides on you. We've all been wrong about some stuff. We've all done some dumb stuff in our lives, maybe some stuff we regret, some stuff we wish we didn't do, some stuff we wish other people would never find out about. There's downsides on all of us, and certainly there are downsides, very public ones, on those guys. But then there are other people who I don't see downsides on. People like Space Force Major Jason Lowry, people like General Stephen Quast, who was on my friend G Money and Patriots in Progress's show Rug Pull Radio on Badlands last Thursday, an inspiring conversation from General Quast. I'm a big fan of General Quast's. He has attended our Great American Restoration Tour, the last few of those. I've gotten to speak to him a little bit. I've gotten to interact with him from the stage. He's a brilliant man who has some extremely interesting thoughts on what our technological future looks like in terms of the transmission of energy and of information. And Bitcoin has a big role in both of those. I mentioned Jason Lowry. He wrote Softwar. That is a theory of Bitcoin as national defense infrastructure, critical national defense. Other countries, massive corporations, banks are investing in Bitcoin. They're not going on message boards and asking people, what if the power goes out? The only way that matters to Bitcoin is if the power goes out and stays out everywhere. The chances of that are absolutely beyond remote. And if that happened, it would be cataclysmic and you would not be worrying about whether or not your currency that you no longer have any access to is denominated in dollars in Chase Bank or denominated in Bitcoin in a digital wallet. General Quast was studying these and working on these ideas while in our military. Jason Lowry is a major at the Space Force who has published Softwar, a theory on Bitcoin as national defense infrastructure, at MIT. If Bitcoin is in the plans for the United States government and the United States military to employ as national defense infrastructure, what do you think the future of Bitcoin is going to be? Now, I'm not one of those people that thinks the dollar is necessarily going to go to zero or that the precious metals will all go to zero, but perhaps on a long enough timeline, that might absolutely be true. I think it's possible that the dollar value could be pinned to Bitcoin. There are all sorts of ways the future can go that I don't know about. But in the meantime, I have decided that if there is this commodity that could be enormously important in our future, and there are only 21 million of them possible, even theoretically, then it is probably wise to acquire as much of that thing as possible. Now, again, I don't presume to tell you what to do. I am not an expert in this subject. I'm telling you about how I think of it from the work that I have done. And I am constantly learning more because it is complicated. And it requires not only changing your ideas, changing your minds, but changing how you see the world. That's not something that just happens overnight because some guy on a podcast tells you it's a good idea. And the problem is when you have this conversation and someone puts some money in and then they watch the value of Bitcoin measured in fiat regime bucks drop, they think you told me what to do and I lost money. Well, no, you didn't. You acquired Bitcoin. Sometimes it is worth less in fiat dollars than it is at other times. But over a long enough timeline, it has gone up at rates you cannot imagine from anything else. But the point is not to invest in Bitcoin in order to win at a fiat game. The idea is not to be buying and selling Bitcoin in order to earn more fiat. The idea is to be investing in Bitcoin so that in the future you have Bitcoin. And so that Bitcoin adoption becomes the thing, because to people like Jason Lowry, and I presume General Quast, I know for certain G Money and Patriots in Progress, to them, this is what it means to be a digital soldier. This is the digital war. The war is against the banks. The banks control the regime fiat currency, and with that regime fiat currency, they control the world. The war is against the banks. The digital war is against the banks. The digital war means Bitcoin, because the belief is that Bitcoin, the decentralized cryptocurrency, can destroy those banks by making their fiat currency redundant and useless. And we can already see that happening in the world. That is what BRICS is. That is what the multipolar world order is about. It is removing from the centralized control. And we see a push for decentralization against all systems. If there is any ultimate macro principle going on in the world right now, it is that. When you look at all the problems of the regime's fiat currency and you think about what the opposite would be in each one of its elements, you will see, at least theoretically, a push toward that option with Bitcoin. It is not a potential alternative. It is a potential inversion of that which must be inverted. Now, again, I understand that there are people out there who do not and will not agree with me. They think there are problems with how Bitcoin might be useful as a currency. Well, again, Bitcoin doesn't only have to be a currency. Bitcoin could be the backing of currencies. But regardless, I cannot prove to you that I'm right, and neither can anybody else. We're talking about how things might go in the future. It is all of our responsibility to gather as much information as we can, try to be as discerning as possible, try to understand it as well as we can, and then do what we think is right. Because it's our responsibility to look out for ourselves going into this unknown future. An idea I have tried to push on this podcast for years now is that when it comes to really, really important issues, we can't just side with the experts and say, well, yeah, you know, I listened to this advice and I guess that advice turned out to be wrong. We can see where that kind of decision making has led people. The information you need is out there. It's up to you to ingest that information and interpret it. You can go to the Telegram channel t.me/veryreasonable and you can type in /edu and hit send, and a list of resources for Bitcoin will pop right up. And if and when you decide that it's something you would like to explore or get involved with, there are people who can help you, including G Money and Patriots in Progress. They do it because they care about winning the information war, as I described it just a minute ago. And if it's something that you want to get involved with, you will probably be acquiring your Bitcoin off what they call an exchange. Coinbase is kind of the most popular one, and it's where I started with all of this. But there are some who worry about the stability of platforms like that in the future, particularly because if you want to get your Bitcoin to self-custody it, and everyone wants to do that at the same time, like a bank run, having it all on Coinbase could present problems. Again, theoretical. But the thing is, this is one of those games that is being played whether or not you're participating. A choice not to participate is still a choice. Bitcoin's at like $67,000 today. You can buy them in Much smaller quantities than a whole coin, though. You certainly don't have to have $67,000. But if it turns out that you realize that everyone is gonna need Bitcoin, and you realize it when it costs $250,000, then your choice not to participate now is only a choice to wait to participate until the price of participation has risen substantially. And I know, what if the power goes out? I got it. So I had mentioned Bitcoin a week or so ago, and some of the people in the comments asked me to talk more about it. Now, I don't like talking about it a ton because, again, I'm not an expert. I read the Bitcoin Standard. I read Softwar. I've watched a bunch of podcasts. I've gotten used to the systems. I've learned how to self-custody, but I am not a Bitcoin expert. I can't answer all your questions, which is why I am not telling you what to do at all, but I do suggest you learn. Just like on everything else, the solution is knowing more. And sometimes I think it's almost a benefit in that process to exist in this space where we have this false reality there that we can interact with at any time. And we know that that false reality represents something close to a total inversion. And so we can examine that inversion. Think about what are the opposite elements of all these elements. Let's go toward those. And once we've conditioned ourselves to do that, well, we begin to watch that appear in information we consume across a number of realms, and it kind of becomes, over time, easier to figure out where we need to go just based on understanding what they want us to believe about the inversion. But anyhow, this is how I think about Bitcoin. If you don't find it convincing, if you don't find it enlightening, if you think I got things wrong, all good. Not trying to argue with you or debate you. Don't even really want to talk about it. Here's what I think. Think whatever you want. Do whatever you want. We're all adults here. If you find value in what I say, that's wonderful. And if you don't, just leave it and move on. But if you decide it's right for you, you can begin to acquire your Bitcoin through a platform, an exchange called River, that is kind of all of our preferred exchange. The Rug Pull Radio guys have been working with River for quite a while. You may have noticed a few weeks ago, Badlands Media became a River affiliate, and me, my show, this show right here, is also now a River affiliate. So you can go to partner.river.com/reasonable and get started over there with as little as like a buck. You can still purchase sats, which is like the smallest fractional denomination of Bitcoin. It would be like a penny, the smallest fractional denomination of a dollar. So partner.river.com/reasonable if you want to get into the whole Bitcoin thing. That link is going to live in the show description, episode to episode. It's pinned to the Telegram. You should have no problem finding it. I'm not going to discuss it as part of the episode again, unless we're talking about Bitcoin. But I wanted to mention it because we are in the midst of a period of awakening about this particular issue. We are getting to the point where the awakenings are about the very, very most important and difficult things. It is not a coincidence right now that this is happening along this timeline. And the potential that seems to be emerging goes so far beyond cryptocurrencies or even currencies. This looks to me to be a critical part of our technological infrastructure for the foreseeable future, and I think it may well be that worldwide. Anyway, as you know, I am not a fan of advertising, but I am a fan of Bitcoin. And to the extent that people are getting involved now, they do need somewhere to buy it. And if they're fans of the show and they want to help out the show and help me out, that's a great way to do it. partner.river.com/reasonable. Now, I mentioned Jack Dorsey just a second ago, and he actually had an interesting Bitcoin-related post that will lead us into the next thing I want to talk about. On Nostr, which is a decentralized social media protocol that is developing right now, another potentially awesome technology which fits right in with a lot of what I've been talking about with X, formerly Twitter, over the last couple of years, since, as you know, I don't believe that Elon Musk, quote unquote, purchased the platform. I believe he is the face of Department of Defense technology. And I believe the future of that platform and the future of social media is decentralized, with perhaps centralized hubs that are totally immune to censorship because they allow information to aggregate and display there, but they have no control on their end what information is displayed. We could get to the point where we have an actual free marketplace of ideas within that digital public square that everyone will have access to, and therefore we'll know all the time what people really think. And at that point, I guess we'll begin having conversations about the morality of naturally convergent views and whether we need to be concerned about the tyranny of a majority that have all reached an opinion they believe to be well-defined and right, and whether or not that should have any sway over anyone else in the culture. Interesting conversations for the future. But one of the concerns people have about Bitcoin is its speed in terms of processing financial transactions. One of the ways that they are going about tackling that problem is with the Lightning Network that allows for faster payments. And Wallet of Satoshi is one of the entities involved with that, without having to get into anything more complicated than that, posted at Jack Dorsey today on Noster. It would be so cool to see a lightning option on those ubiquitous Square point of sale terminals. I think the wallet ecosystem is ready. What do you think? Jack Dorsey said, agree, working on it. Now, Square is that payment processing platform. You'll see the little boxes on the corner of an iPad at some local small business. They also process payments online. Again, a very basic description. But if they begin taking Lightning payments, then that basically means that people are paying with sort of Bitcoin on a very prominent payment system owned by and aligned with someone they used to hate, Jack Dorsey. But do you hate Jack Dorsey in the future? Was it all Jack Dorsey's problem? The Twitter problems, the censorship problems? Was that Jack Dorsey or not? I think that that question is still largely an unknown. I know very, very smart people who think that there is absolutely no way that's Jack Dorsey's fault, and Jack Dorsey is doing all the right things and very much a quote-unquote good guy. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but I do know that he probably knows certain things about our technological future that we do not know. It's entirely possible that bad guys understand that a certain system will inevitably win, even if it is not their system, and they might still be hedging so that they can take advantage of that system, or they might think that they have a way to divert that system, and so they're participating in the growth of that system, hoping to steer it off course at some point. But this should just reinforce the idea that we can't simply assume that something is some certain way based on who's associated with it. I absolutely get the hesitancy to take Jack Dorsey seriously or think that there's any possibility that guy might be a good guy. And I'm not asking you to think that. It doesn't actually matter because it doesn't affect the underlying reality. Either Bitcoin is inevitable or it's not. Jack Dorsey profiting off of it, benefiting from it in the future, would not be a reason to oppose something that is inevitable and could be very good if more good people participate in it. And that talk about Jack Dorsey, I was just setting you up for the curveball. Here's the curveball. Last night, Jack Dorsey on Twitter told all of his followers to watch Everything is a Rich Man's Trick. And if you have not seen that documentary, you can find it on YouTube. That's one of those old school truther movies that'll give you a real quick waking up if you are a normie. It is a great one to share with normies. Hey, normie, I know you're having a hard time understanding the world right now. Why don't you just put this on and give it 20 minutes and see what you think? And then 3 hours later, the normie will call you up and be like, oh, we had a president whose dad was a Nazi? And you say, yeah, Normie, all these presidents' dads are Nazis. And then you have a good hearty laugh about how they just voted for a Klansman in 2020. And you say, ah, it's okay, Normie. I voted for a Freemason or two in my life as well. All right, so we were talking yesterday about the extraordinary fine that they're attempting to impose on Donald Trump in New York after creepy Judge Engoron decided that despite there being no victims and no crime, Donald Trump still owed the state of New York nearly $500 million for providing what he deems to be false valuations of Donald Trump properties that were included on a financial form to banks that came attached to a disclaimer form which told the banks, hey, these are just estimations. We talked yesterday about how the excessive fine is a violation of the Eighth Amendment and how the fact that they are making Donald Trump spend all of this money defending himself in all of these cases and these punitive fines, that financial burden is making it impossible for him to campaign and actually violates Donald Trump's First Amendment rights as well. And of course, all of this lays down a predicate, sets a template for when this will be reversed, hopefully beginning a year from now. And hey, we'll take it if it comes sooner. Trump posted this morning on Truth Social. Even though I did nothing wrong, a radical left New York judge, a true Trump hater, Arthur Engoron, are we allowed to speak about his unconstitutional gag order? Picked a number out of thin air, $355 million plus interest, reminiscent of John Lovitz, the liar on SNL when it was good, and wants me to bond it, which is not possible for bonding companies to do in such a high amount, before I can even appeal. That is crazy. If I sold assets and then won the appeal, the assets would be forever gone. Also, putting up money before an appeal is very expensive. When I win the appeal, all of that money is gone and I would have done nothing wrong. The crooked judge, who has already been overturned 4 times on this case, a record, fully understands this. He gave us a demand which he knows is impossible to do. This witch hunt between a bad judge and a corrupt and racist attorney general is horrible for New York. Businesses are fleeing while violent crime flourishes. Election interference. And he basically got all of it on the record in that one statement. That pretty much encompassed the entire story. Very, very impressive organization of thoughts, Donald J. Trump. Now, you have to notice with these posts, Donald Trump is putting all of the critical points on the record. It's also important to remember that he actually did win that election in 2020. Now, what's going on behind the scenes? We can't know all of that, but we do know that Donald Trump won that election. We can see the results of it every day. We can understand that the country does not back Joe Biden and never did. They didn't show up for his events in 2020. And I know, the very deadly pandemic. That's what it was all about. And the very violent insurrection and the Ukraine war and the immigration. All of this stuff that Americans just love. They voted for it in 2020 and by golly, they're going to vote for it again. Except that's obviously false. That's why the censorship and the propaganda and the political persecutions and prosecutions are all necessary. That's why they're calling American parents who go to school board meetings domestic terrorists. If they had 81 million real legal American votes, they wouldn't need all the rest of this. So Donald Trump is a duly elected president, and he is putting on the record in public a running list of these crimes by the regime and its actors, these little assistants, these little puppets that run around doing whatever they're supposed to do, begging, desperate for the incentives the regime offers and trying to avoid the punishments for not going along. And the punishments for not going along is their toast because they're all corrupt. They're all compromised. That's why they were being given power by the regime in the first place. So it is an existential crisis for each and every one of these people involved. Normies out there wonder how the conspiracy could ever become this large. And it's because all of these people have attached themselves to the same incentive structure by virtue of their corruption and their compromise. To them, their reputation within the party of false decorum is absolutely everything. When Donald Trump wins and is recognized as president again, their power crumbles, their reputation crumbles. The third term will be so much worse for them than the first one was. Because then their defenses are down. Then they are fully exposed. Everyone already knowing what they've done. They don't even have their hands on the levers of power anymore. They cannot control the information that gets out there. Nobody trusts their propaganda media. They're not able to censor anybody. There is chaos across the world. The currencies are collapsing. All of this is going to be unavoidable, and everybody's going to know where to lay that responsibility. They are going to want to see the perpetrators punished. And all of them understand what's coming if their corrupt and compromised leaders don't hold on to power. So of course they're all freaking out. Of course they are all engaging in further corruption. They tell you every day that it's an existential threat. They tell you it's going to be the end of our democracy. They spend their time arguing about why all of these extra legal, unconstitutional, authoritarian, dictatorial means are totally justified because of how big the threat is, the threat that Donald Trump presents. We should understand that they mean it. They all mean it. And the fact that they all mean it means that they are willing to abuse their position of power, authority, and influence however they can to keep the entire system functioning. If they all get that message at the same time, they all do it as hard as they can at the same time. And it looks like it must have all been directly coordinated. And so people can't believe it. They can't believe that something that large could be directly coordinated. But it doesn't need to be directly coordinated because they operate as part of a hive mind. They are all subject to the same messaging. It has the same emotional appeal. It tells them, hey, here's when you should be extra, extra scared. We need to do everything we possibly can to make sure that these people can't have power. It doesn't matter what we have to do, we have to do it. That is their messaging on television every single day from the mainstream media. Every single day. It's been that way for 9 years now. In 3 months, it'll be 9 years. They have been freaking out the entire time, and still they are told that however much they're freaking out, they should still freak out more. Anyone who actually believes that is going to sell out to the maximum possible degree. They will do anything within their power to keep that system at large in power. And you can watch them activate all at the same time, all the time. Just watch when they have the same totally irrational reaction to something together and they all join in, like the bloodbath thing last weekend. And maybe we'll get back to that at the end of the episode. I'm not sure yet. We'll see how it goes. So we're being told that Donald Trump is broke. He can't pay the bond for this trial. He's not going to be able to come up with the money. That means he's not going to be able to appeal. That means that he owes the state of New York $600 million for a made-up crime prosecuted by a racist and corrupt New York State Attorney General and decided by one single corrupt judge. We're told Trump is broke. We're told the campaign is broke. Yesterday, we were told now these billionaires are appearing, all these billionaire donors. MSNBC is presenting that as Donald Trump is begging the rich people for money because he's broke. And now that they've established that Donald Trump is broke, even though he has a merger deal happening tomorrow for his media group, but now that they've established he's broke, they have to create a conspiracy theory about what it means that Donald Trump is broke. And here is deep state stooge since back in the Clinton era, a fellow at the Brookings Institution, a board member of Netflix who has worked for just about every globalist organization there is, management consultant at McKinsey, on the board of the JFK Center for Performing Arts, the Bureau of National Affairs, the National Democratic Institute, and the U.S. Fund for UNICEF, And, oh yeah, she's married to an ABC News producer. I'm talking about Susan Rice. Here she is with MSNBC's Lawrence O'Donnell spinning up the new conspiracy theory about Donald Trump. We are in the early stages of a brand new Russia hoax, and it's kind of making me think, this is just a little speculation, just for fun, we'll see if I'm right or not very soon, but you gotta wonder if once this DWAC-TMTG merger goes through, they're going to say that there's some Russian investor, so now Donald Trump is using his social media app to spread Russian propaganda to the American public. And then because it'll be partially owned by a Russian, well, that'll give Joe Biden the rights to take the app down from the App Store because they just decided it was okay for TikTok last week. Remember? I guess we'll see. Anyway, take a listen.
When you look at Donald Trump's indebtedness and the real prospect that he may not be able to raise through normal banking channels some $500 million or more that he owes, you have to wonder where he's going to get that money from if he is able to get it. And in the event he has to take that money from an individual or an entity, whether domestic or international, that individual or entity is potentially going to have real influence over him. And so that is of concern when, in particular, when you add it to the reality that we know that, you know, he has a long history of foreign financial entanglements, and he's accepted money from the Chinese Communist Party to his properties. He's in partnership and invested with the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund. There's just so many ways in which the whole stench of money from dubious places infuses his business enterprise. And so this would add more questions should that be the case going forward.
Let's listen to John Bolton, who served as Donald Trump's national security advisor, what he says about this.
He is consumed by these troubles. His family is consumed by them. And I think foreigners will try to take advantage of it one way or another. They may be doing it already.
And Ambassador Rice, he's been there. He's seen it up close.
He absolutely has. And I think the bigger point here, Lawrence, is that Donald Trump's former vice president, two of his defense secretaries, two of his national security advisors, a secretary of state, a UN ambassador, all of whom have worked up close and personally with him, have judged him to be unfit and don't think he should serve again as president of the United States. And they know better than you or I could begin to know just how dangerous Donald Trump is for our national security. The big picture is even beyond the foreign financial entanglements. This is a man who has said repeatedly that he would not stand by our NATO allies, that he encouraged Putin to have his way with our European partners and would break up, he claims, and as Bolton validates, the most important alliance in American history, which would leave us and our allies extremely vulnerable. He's continues to praise dictators from Putin to Kim Jong-un, and it's exceedingly dangerous to have somebody potentially try to return to the Oval Office who has already done such damage to our national interests and is promising to do far more.
Now think about the fact that that lady has been a prominent deep state figure for 30 years. Is like a right hand to Barack Obama. Now she thinks Donald Trump owes $500 million in a very real court case that was fairly decided and will not be overturned on appeal. She is pretending to think that each and every bit of that is illegitimate, proper, and just. Otherwise, it would be crazy for her to suggest that Donald Trump owes that and that his inability to come up with that bond so far is going to mean that he is desperate for money in order to pay this fine and appeal this case. So at the baseline, this is already founded on nothing. It is total nonsense that underlies the rest of her claim. And what is the rest of the claim? Well, if Donald Trump is broke, then Donald Trump needs to get money from somewhere. Donald Trump needs to get money from somewhere. Therefore, he's probably going to get it from a foreigner. If Donald Trump needs to get money from a foreigner, well, he already has all of these accusations about foreigners he's done business with, or foreign countries he's done business with, or foreign countries whose leaders he's said nice things about in the scope of Donald Trump as president trying to have good foreign relations. Therefore, because Donald Trump is broke, he's going to sell out the United States of America to our foreign adversaries. That's bananas. And a woman who believes all that should never, ever be anywhere close to a position of power. But as I said, she's Barack Hussein Obama's right hand, essentially. And as for needing money and getting it from shady places, I just went through all the places she's worked and had fellowships and where she's been a board member. That is getting money from shady places because she is offering political access. She is corrupt in the same way that all of these people are corrupt. And again, this is an inversion within the false reality. Lawrence O'Donnell's viewers certainly, and Biden voters generally, think that everything she just said is true. And because all that is true, all of what's happening is justified, even though all of what's happening are the characteristics that they would normally attribute to a banana republic dictatorial authoritarian regime. The fake president who was installed after stealing an election is guilty of all the things that Susan Rice just said about Donald Trump. That's insane. And each and every element of that is itself a conspiracy theory. These people are absolutely nuts. Part of the inversion is the inversion of the term conspiracy theory. It was thought up by the people who create the false reality as an information weapon to be used against anyone who's going to point out that that reality is indeed false. They are literally making up conspiracy theories. They are inventing a false reality layered on top of the observable empirical reality prime. And then they tell everyone who can observe and connect obviously true things that they are the ones making everything up. It seems like we're getting the early signs of a new Russiagate, and I cannot wait till this merger goes through because they have not been talking much about it while they're trying to project that Donald Trump is broke. You have to think that they are going to figure out some way to exploit that merger story to make it sound like Donald Trump just got a major cash infusion from foreigners or corrupt sources. This has been a process ongoing for years that the regime has tried to block a number of times, and it is reported that Donald Trump's stake in the company that will emerge from the merger, which will carry the stock symbol DJT. And let's go ahead and spend a minute on this. This is SeekingAlpha.com. DWAC, Trump merger could close next week, bringing volatility. So this is from today. On Friday, the 22nd, Digital World will hold a meeting of shareholders to vote the merger with Trump Media. After this, the merger could be closed quickly and the resulting company with stock symbol DJT could commence trading on the NASDAQ next week. The potential media coverage could result in significant volatility and a large price movement. Over the long term, I simply do not see this company becoming a decent investment, but in the short term, traders could make money during upcoming events. So this is someone that does not like Trump and thinks that this project will be a failure. Good luck. It is amazing to me that people just still count him out constantly. But sometimes it's nice to get the Trump-hating perspective just to check our biases and reconnect with their version of reality. From the article. SPAC mergers usually close within a few days, so it is likely that the company will be trading as DJT already at the start of next week. Trump's 90% stake in TMTG could theoretically be valued at more than $3 billion if DJT shares continue trading for the current DWAC share price. This merger has received relatively little media attention, but is likely to be an event coupled with some high volatility. Now, because this financial blogger is certain that he is quite smart and Donald Trump is quite stupid, he believes the official story about Donald Trump and his finances. He writes, "It is no secret that Donald Trump is in dire need of cash currently, and the DWAC merger might just provide the lifeline he needs. Post-merger, there is a 6 months lockup agreement in place during which shareholders of TMTG who own more than 10% of stock are not allowed to sell or exchange. This period could be reduced to 150 days in case the closing price of DWAC stock equals or exceeds $12 per share for any 20 trading days within any 30 trading day period." Now, right now, the stock is trading in the mid-40s, last I looked. So trading above $12 a share seems like a given, unless, of course, after this goes through and trading opens, the bottom just drops out. And hey, I suppose anything is possible. But if that doesn't happen and people are prepared to get behind this Donald Trump project, then that $12 standard might be no problem at all. Regardless, I expect we'll get some pretty interesting stories coming out of this thing. Regardless, it sounds like they're spinning up another Russiagate hoax. Maybe they think they have created enough Russia haters to pull that one off, but there is absolutely no way in the world that is true. You heard Susan Rice talking about the existential threat to our democracy. She talked about Donald Trump's foreign relations and how that poses a threat to their national security. Their national security and our national security are entirely different agendas. Donald Trump represents our national security. Susan Rice represents their national security. And their national security requires the impoverishment and depopulation of the people. That is just part of the agenda. They tell you all the time. Now, I talked yesterday about Kurt Olson's recent filing in the case emerging from Arizona, Carrie Lake and Mark Fincham, going after Dominion and the machine companies and Arizona election officials. Well, Kurt Olson was back on Steve Bannon's War Room this morning, and he said this, which I just found enormously interesting.
Here's a question. There's these defamation suits. Fox wrote an $800 million check, plus they spent tens of millions of dollars on lawyers. You've got Newsmax. You've got other people. They've got very smart lawyers. Why have no other investigative teams or lawyers found this, which you would think would be enough to get them past Fox writing an $800 million check? How did the best lawyers in the country with the top investigators in the country miss this?
That's a good question. And I'll tell you, that settlement with Fox, which nobody has ever seen, by the way, the details. And I don't think there's any record that actually $800 million was actually transferred. That whole amount is very sketchy because it is so many multiples of what Dominion is worth in terms of its enterprise value. The settlement made no sense really from an economic or legal standpoint. The damages just didn't justify that amount. And again, nobody has seen that settlement.
Hang on. It's not a private settlement. They're a publicly traded company. Are you asserting right here you think they misled shareholders by lying to shareholders about the settlement? They're a publicly traded company. How can you say that?
What I'm saying is that when you look at it, it doesn't make sense. It never did. The amount of that settlement does not make sense. But what it did do is scare the bejesus out of people thinking, oh my God, $800 million that Fox paid, there must be nothing to any of these allegations. Why would Fox pay so much money if these were credible allegations? So it certainly did create that narrative. But this evidence that we put forward is solid. And I think that Fox's attorneys and Fox, they should be asked the question, why didn't you bring this evidence to light or why didn't you uncover it?
Now, if you were listening a year ago to this show when that settlement was announced and all the narratives emerged, you would know that for the entire time I've been saying that settlement and the narratives that have emerged from it are fake. I have said many times that Raheem Kassam in the National Pulse published a piece citing the Dominion discovery documents directly that showed Dominion understands, they know just like J. Alex Alderman, who had presented his reports well before that time, it is widely known that Dominion machines are vulnerable and wide open to access and manipulation. It said it in their own discovery documents. Even CISA had adopted that position by the time this settlement was reached. And based on that alone, there is absolutely no way that Fox News could have ever lost if the case had to be decided in court. So they settled it out of court for an extraordinary amount of money that made it seem like Fox really messed up in their coverage of Dominion. The takeaway being that Dominion machines were actually very safe and secure. Otherwise, Fox News wouldn't have, quote unquote, owed them all that money. Now, the obvious conclusion to reach is that the money being exchanged either is not real, the exchange is not real, or the money is going from one branch of something to another branch of something, and it is simply an accounting move. And any of those three could be well supported, understanding the system that we actually exist in. Fox News and Dominion are not on opposite sides. They are both key parts of the regime's overall global infrastructure. The regime cares about its propaganda media apparatus the same way it cares about its election fraud apparatus that allows it to steal elections all over the world. Or maybe even a more accurate way to say it is to determine the outcome of elections all over the world. We just talked about that yesterday, too. That is why Dominion exists, by the way, to determine the outcomes of elections. That is what the machines are for. There would be no other reason to complicate the system in that manner to add 1 + 1 + 1 + 1. So what happened was one small piece of the regime, Fox News, claimed that they were prepared to pay Dominion 787 million regime bucks to make sure that neither they nor this other part of the regime had to admit that the outcomes of the elections are all determined by a force that has no interest in what the people think whatsoever. Now, all of that was the obvious takeaway for me the moment I read that story, because as soon as you have an understanding of what the regime infrastructure, what the system looks like broadly, and you understand that parts of that system will pursue common interests, even though it might look like they're in opposition at a given point, and you know that the elections are stolen because you know that Dominion systems exist to enable election theft, well, it's the only logical conclusion to draw. It's like a friend paying you on PayPal and you want that money to go into your bank, so you move the money from one place to another. That's what the regime does when it moves 787 million regime bucks from Fox News to Dominion. And as Kurt Olson says, a man who is actually suing Dominion, he can't even find proof that any of that has happened. Why is that? For a year, we've been told that that case is proof that the machines don't have a problem, which should be a reminder to never take anything these people say seriously. And so let's move to a follow-up of the discussion we were having on Monday. We went through the New York Times article about how Trump and his allies were winning the war over disinformation, published to frame the following day's arguments before the Supreme Court in the case that was formerly known as Missouri versus Biden and is now Murthy versus Missouri, arguing about whether or not the government was allowed to communicate with social media companies asking them to censor the protected political speech of the American people. We heard about how there was no proof that that happened and the people bringing the case can't bring the case. And none of that censorship can be directly traceable to the government. And of course, there's also this delay on the timeline, and there's no way that the government could know in advance what it's going to need censored. Except also there was that time where the government warned media organizations months in advance that there might be a Russian disinformation op happening in the future. And if it did happen, you all need to know that you're going to have to censor that stuff immediately. So it turns out they can plan it well in advance, but that doesn't concern the court, of course, because as Ketanji Brown Jackson complained, the First Amendment limits the government, and they want to believe that the government, when it has a compelling case, should be able to override the First Amendment. That is basically what we heard in the nation's highest court on Monday, and the New York Times prepared us to think all of that was really good based on how threatening it is that we may in the future exist in a free speech environment that might lead us to another January 6th very violent insurrection. Now, of course, we're told that government prohibition of free speech is just a conspiracy theory. They are focused on disinformation. They are trying to provide people with proper information on a once-in-a-lifetime, very deadly pandemic and on a stolen election that was just a big lie. In fact, Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes. And so the government had a compelling interest in making sure that we couldn't say otherwise. Well, America First Legal published this yesterday. Government documents confirm the Biden administration's mobilization of U.S. counterterrorism assets to support Imran Ahmed's global censorship campaign. Now, we talked on Monday about how part of that New York Times article was based on Mike Benz being a Jewish Jew hater and some kind of white nationalist or something who used to think the Proud Boys were funny or whatever. Well, Mike Benz has been talking for a long time about how Defense Department DARPA developed technology, social media technology, communications technology had been used for counterterrorism in the Middle East. It was responsible for events like the Arab Spring. This was, hey, let's launch a color revolution technology. And it was turned from counterterrorism efforts in the Middle East directly onto American citizens and used to censor and propagandize us. That has been a central part of what Mike Benz has been revealing for these last few years. And here we are with some government documents showing it to be true. Today, America First Legal released documents obtained from its investigation into the Biden administration's communications with Imran Ahmed and his UK-based censorship group, the Center for Countering Digital Hate. The emails from the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of State show how the Biden administration mobilized the federal government's counterterrorism assets to support CCDH's global censorship campaign. From the day it took power, the Biden administration mobilized the national security state to support its censorship program. On June 15, 2021, Biden's National Security Council published its first ever national strategy for countering domestic terrorism. To justify censorship, Biden's strategy asserted that, quote, internet-based communications platforms make Americans, quote, vulnerable to domestic terrorist recruitment and other harmful content, end quote. Effectively, the Biden administration turned to the national security state and its allied technology companies to censor political opponents. In Orwellian fashion, it said, all told, a better, more holistic and coordinated understanding of and information sharing on today's threat will allow a more effective and comprehensive response. That response will address not just current and imminent incarnations of the domestic terrorism threat, but also its contributing factors before they can generate still more violence in the future. And that is a quote from these documents. That is the Biden administration's viewpoint. And let's read that last sentence again. That response will address not just current and imminent incarnations of the domestic terrorism threat, but also its contributing factors before they can generate still more violence in the future. And so what they're talking about there really matters a lot. Now, if that statement came out during the Trump administration, we might be inclined to think they are targeting Black Lives Matter Antifa domestic terrorists. These are organized cells of a larger organization that is well-funded. It is directed in its activities by global regime entities. and they execute their role in destabilizing societies. It is part of the Color Revolution playbook. We watched it in full effect throughout the summer of 2020. Hopefully we won't see it again, but we may well see it again. That does represent a legitimate domestic terrorism threat because, by definition, what they are doing is domestic terrorism. The only problem is we've also seen people called domestic terrorists for showing up at school board meetings. And we also know who the targets of censorship have been. And for many of us, it's us. And while that seems like a relatively clear-cut case from our perspective, and of course it is, there is no comparison between us and BLM Antifa. What would matter when you're putting a law or a standard in place is what that standard can be used for when the other side is in power. Do you want to have standards like this at all? And I think when it comes to censorship, especially, the answer should obviously be no. There have to be better ways to protect ourselves than trying to make sure that the bad people can't say the no-no things. If it's a power you wouldn't want your opposition to have, you better think very carefully before you desire to wield it yourself. As the Biden strategy explained, as part of its effort to control information, quote, we will also build a community of, quote, critical partners, including, quote, state, local, tribal, and territorial governments, as well as foreign allies and partners, civil society, the technology sector, academia, and more, end quote. So that's everybody in the regime. These, quote, interlocking communities that can contribute information, expertise, analysis, and more, end quote, and, quote, with the right orientation and partnerships, the federal government can energize, connect, and empower those communities. Communities whose input was critical to the formulation of this strategy itself, end quote. So they basically talked to all their friends, said, hey, friends, what do you think we should do to censor these people? They all came back with answers, and those answers became the Biden policy. Let's get the think tanks, the corporations, and the NGOs to weigh in. They'll tell us what system they want to create among themselves, and then we will empower them and fund them to do that. Our hands, the government's hands, will be off of all that. We're going to leave it to civil society, local regime-oriented governments, foreign regime-oriented allies and partners, the tech sector, all their friends. But let's continue. Accordingly, it declared that, quote, in a global multi-stakeholder setting with partner governments, the United States endorses the Christchurch call to action to eliminate terrorist and violent extremist content online, end quote. So because of a major, quote unquote, terrorism incident, they have created a new policy. They're going to name it after that so-called terrorist incident, and that will be the justification for why they need to eliminate extremist content online. Now, extremist content, of course, is judged based on their own standards, and so then you just get to the point where they can eliminate content that violates their standards online. And that, my friends, is censorship. In 2019, the Trump administration had refused this quote-unquote call to action on free speech grounds. In fact, on the same day that the Trump administration announced that it was passing on this international censorship initiative, it reportedly released an online tool for users to report if they suspect they've been the subject of political bias by Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, or other online platforms. Now, that was not widely publicized. Biden's government claimed that, quote, maximizing the federal government's understanding of domestic terrorism means supporting and making appropriate use of the analysis performed by entities outside the government, end quote. CCDH was one such entity, and that again is the Center for Countering Digital Hate. CCDH is a UK-based nonprofit that has been encouraging censorship online for years. It originates from and is staffed with many individuals in the UK. However, it has been incorporated in the United States as a registered 501c3 nonprofit in the United States effective December 11th, 2020. What timing? That's right when everyone was telling the big lie and right before we had the very violent insurrection and that whole fake inauguration thing, as the Capitol was fenced in and surrounded with 25,000 soldiers. CCDH describes itself as a, quote, not-for-profit, non-governmental organization, end quote, that, quote, works to stop the spread of online hate and disinformation through innovative research, public campaigns, and policy advocacy. It describes its founder and CEO, Imran Ahmed, as an, quote, authority on social and psychological malignancies on social media, such as identity-based hate, extremism, disinformation, and conspiracy theories, end quote. However, Ahmed is a leftist political operative connected to the UK Labour Party. Through his work with Stop Funding Fake News, which was later folded into CCDH, Imran Ahmed took credit for a so-called defund racism campaign associated with Black Lives Matter to force Google to remove their ads from the Federalist and Zero Hedge. CCDH is best known for its March 24, 2021 report, The Disinformation Dozen, Why Platforms Must Act on 12 Leading Online Anti-Vaxxers, which branded 12 Americans, including Robert F. Kennedy Jr., quote, anti-vaxxers responsible for almost two-thirds of anti-vaccine content circulating on social media platforms, end quote, and called for them to be deplatformed. As the Missouri versus Biden case revealed, Biden White House officials quickly pressured social media companies to deplatform and demote the Disinfo Dozen. On July 15, 2021, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki admitted to, quote, flagging problematic posts for Facebook, end quote. Presumably citing CCDH's report, Psaki also implied that the, quote, 12 people who are producing 65% of anti-vaccine misinformation should not remain active on Facebook, end quote. That was the illegitimate press secretary speaking on behalf of the illegitimate president, suggesting that platforms censor these people based on information from the Center for Countering Digital Hate. Many of us watched her do that live. And many of us also watched her suggest to organizations like Spotify and Apple that they take down people's podcasts on the same disinformation standards. And just days later, Joe Rogan announced on an Instagram video that he was okay with Spotify censoring him. You know, when he puts out disinformation, he understands that sometimes it's important for them to censor. And hey, he's making $300 million, so why would he give a shit? And then Spotify just started banning things left and right. And hey, I was banned right then too. Ah, it's good times when rich people support the hell out of censors. On or around March 29th, 2022, Robert Silvers, the DHS Undersecretary for Strategy, Policy, and Plans, who co-chaired the short-lived Disinformation Governance Board with Nina Jankowicz, connected with CCDH's then-head of policy, Eva Hartzorn Sanders, via LinkedIn. On March 29th, 2022, Eva Hartzorn Sanders emailed Robert Silvers to, quote, meet to discuss research that CCDH released and coming up in the next couple of weeks, and to hear about the work that DHS has underway, including more about the strategies and plans that the DHS team have developed, end quote. Eva also invited Robert to CCDH's Global Summit and Changemakers Dinner. In addition to her lead policy role at CCDH, Eva Hartzorn Sanders separately provides, quote, leading government advice on the response to the March 15th terrorist attacks on Christchurch mosques. So she's an expert on that event and a critical cog in this particular issue. Eva Hartzorn Sanders promoted online censorship legislation around the world, including the UK's Online Safety Bill, testifying before the House of Commons that, quote, websites like the Gateway Pundit profit from Google ads to the tune of over $1 million while spreading election disinformation. That has led to real-world death threats sent to election officials and contributed to the events of January 6th. Oh, no! It is not something we want to see replicated in the UK, end quote. Eva Hartzorn Sanders also opposed a principle, quote, that is framed negatively about preventing platforms from removing content rather than positively about addressing content that undermines elections. See, it's all the way you describe it. They don't want to say it in a way that gives the negative connotation of censorship. They want to make the positive case that they are giving these platforms the tools they need to address content that undermines our democracy and our elections and our pandemic response and our Ukraine war and our paragliding go-karts and our global slave trade. All of it can just collapse under the weight of disinformation. And then, of course, you remember the total inversion and you're like, wait, disinformation? That's just the truth. What would we expect the total inversion of truth to be? They're saying that true things are disinformation, and the disinformation they produce is the information they tell us is derived from the authoritative source and therefore the only thing that can be true. You see, it's all about how you frame it. You need to use the correct words to keep everybody within the correct reality, and their correct reality is the false reality. You don't want to be the sort of person that promotes censorship. That makes you sound like you're really some kind of Nazi or something. And they're definitely not that, despite the fact that they have been supporting Nazis in Ukraine for years now and making no bones about it. They just say, no, those are the good Nazis because the comedic actor is Jewish. You don't want to be a person that's promoting censorship. What you want to be is a person who believes that organizations should have the tools to address content that undermines our elections or our democracy or our efforts to save those brave Ukrainians and protect their very sovereign borders. But back to the breakdown from America First Legal. Robert Silvers quickly replied, quote, I am copying our principal deputy assistant secretary for counterterrorism, Lucian Sikorsky, to follow up and pursue these opportunities, end quote. The next day, on March 30th, 2022, Eva Hartzorn Sanders also invited the DHS Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Counterterrorism to CCDH's Global Summit and Changemakers Dinner, and they began scheduling for a call in the next few weeks. So they networked, they made plans, they became friends. By June 16, 2022, a White House task force to address online harassment and abuse was established under the leadership of the director of the White House Gender Policy Council and the assistant to the president for national security affairs. By September 23, 2022, CCDH was directly meeting with officials from the White House, the NSC, and the Department of State's Bureau of Counterterrorism, updating them with CCDH's latest findings. So we have a foreign organization directing our illegitimate government on how to censor us. You know, just how the founders meant it when they wrote that Bill of Rights. We always hear the shortened version of the First Amendment. Here's the real version. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances, unless they receive emails from a UK-based regime-affiliated NGO who studies online hate. We were never told that that was the full text of the First Amendment. I mean, they never thought at the time that that was going to come into play, but they wrote it just in case. And here we are in that very low probability scenario where our First Amendment rights completely disappear now that some foreign actors have weighed in on what needs to be censored and the best ways to do it if you're a government that's not allowed to censor. On September 30th, 2022, CCDH formally submitted its research and policy recommendations on technology-facilitated gender-based violence to the White House Task Force. Its submission highlighted how CCDH, quote, studied the way anti-vaccine extremists, hate actors, climate change deniers, and misogynists weaponize platforms to spread lies and attack marginalized groups, end quote, and developed policy and legislation to, quote, ensure that social media platforms meet CCDH's framework for addressing digital hate and disinformation, embedding safety by design, transparency requirements on algorithms, rules enforcement, and economics, accountability and responsibility, end quote. So they're basically getting in there and making sure that they are able to affect the activity on those platforms in whatever ways they need to achieve the proper results. And I gotta wonder if maybe their control over the economics of some of these platforms has something to do with the fact that the people who are monetized and making a killing on X, formerly Twitter, are all total disinformation ops, complete and total influencers and shills, and they're getting tens and sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars a month for creating their quote-unquote viral content. You really do have to wonder. The level of control and what they want to control is insane. And all of those claims, hate actors, anti-vaccine extremists, climate change deniers, misogynists, etc., it sounds to me like they are laying that stuff down for the future. After reading that book, Our Secret Constitution, I know I mention it a lot, George Fletcher, Columbia Law School professor, total leftist, total globalist, he wrote that our original Constitution was essentially replaced intentionally as one of the key purposes of the Civil War. It is a leftist writing all of this, saying that the reason for the Civil War was to change the government from the constitutional republic into a democracy, a focus on liberty to a focus on equality, a focus on the nation rather than the sovereign individual. That was the purpose of all of that. In the book, he had a long conversation about how those Reconstruction amendments essentially allowed legislatures and the courts to rewrite the Constitution just as a matter of process, particularly with the courts and what they define as equal protection under the law as required. All of these claims about what sort of content is being censored and what sort of people are producing the content that must be censored sound like they will be referenced in the future in order to protect this sort of activity in a court of law. I guess we shall see. Back to America First Legal. On March 3rd, 2023, the White House published its initial blueprint for the White House Task Force to address online harassment and abuse. The blueprint highlighted federal research funding, digital equity grants, Department of Education guidance to be issued to colleges, and an FTC enforcement action against a gaming platform. According to Eva Hartzorn Sanders, CCDH was, quote, able to feed in research and policy recommendations for its development, end quote. And they show a tweet from Eva Hartzorn Sanders. She attaches the White House's executive summary on the initial blueprint for the White House Task Force to address online harassment and abuse. She writes, great to see the publication of the White House's initial blueprint and to have been able to feed in research and policy recommendations for its development. Alongside necessary tech law reform, this strategy will help with addressing a known and pressing problem of technology-facilitated gender-based violence. So this lady out of the UK is very happy about how her recommendations are being implemented in the illegitimate regime's blueprint for addressing online harassment and abuse. What could go wrong? America First Legal closes with a statement from their executive director, Gene Hamilton. These documents demonstrate yet again the Biden administration's drive to censor its political opponents. In the name of fighting domestic terrorism, it eagerly partnered with foreign leftists to silence American citizens who questioned or challenged the government's irrational vaccine mandates and who dared to discuss the possibility of fraud during the 2020 election. The Biden administration's national security strategy was a fraud, and its program of censorship an indefensible disgrace. And they link to the documents if you would like to do further research. And just a note before I go, tomorrow is that deadline. They have to pass this second minibus bill to fund the government for the rest of the year. It seems like, to follow the narrative at least, it seems like the Republicans are going to cave. We are going to get that unipartisan compromise. They have apparently agreed on the bill. It's actually six separate bills bound together in this minibus package. They published it at like 2:30 in the morning last night. It is over 1,000 pages long, and they plan on voting for it tomorrow. And because a lot will probably change between now and then, I may as well just save that for tomorrow. I will be back tomorrow at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic, and Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com, and you can find everything else by heading to Linktree, linktree.com/I'm Your Moderator. And I'll see you soon out on the range.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'm Your Moderator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at imyourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/imyourmoderator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon, down on the range.
It's happening!